In honor of our special guest tonight, let me say, welcome, humans.
Well, you never know. I think that's a little exclusionary, Jay.
For those that identify as Martians, you're also welcome.
Yeah.
Actually,
if it came from Uranus, forget about it.
Actually, it's rapidly approaching the only politically correct way to refer to other people.
Give it time. Even that's going
to be. Greetings, Earthling.
Even that's going to be. It's going to be more like greeting beings, and then somebody's going to bitch about that. How beings is exclusionary for like the undead or something. I mean, who knows? You know, there's always somebody's going to bitch about something.
I identify as a lawn dart.
Yeah.
Ghosts have rights.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, wait till the Democrats start signing up ghosts to be voters.
They already do that.
They've been doing that for decades.
don't be corporealist.
Yeah, that's right. So our guest tonight is, well, today or, well, it's tonight when we're recording it. So I'll just say tonight. I don't care when you're listening it. It might be, you know, who knows what time it is. But it is Martin Wilsey, the world famous author. Do you prefer Martin or Marty? What do you?
Either is fine. Most people call me Marty.
Okay, Martin.
Okay, Martin it is.
Do you want to talk about your past or do you only want to talk about the future?
Oh, I don't care. Either one. I think that if we started talking about too much of my past, this would be a 10-hour show, that'd be get through the sixth grade. Yeah.
History
is good.
I only know two other people that actually worked for a three-letter agency, and besides you.
Ah, well, that's real boring history. You know, the most I can say about that is I drank coffee and went to a lot of meetings.
Hey, that's pretty government to work.
That's right. It is pretty much what it is. Yeah, we can talk about it a little if you want. I think that's germane to my.
I think it is
my new career.
It is an interesting background, especially since you retired from that to write full time. I think people might want to know what you retired from.
Yeah, basically my job. I work for an FFRDC. That's a federally funded research and development corporation. It's just a funny way to say a government think tank where the government can come and ask us questions. They have a lot of questions. And the company I work for was subject matter experts on a wide, ginormous variety of topics. And I specialized in research associated with one of those topics or several of those topics. So that's what I did. Whenever the government had a big old question about something, if it was in my bailiwick, I would go out and, drink a lot of coffee, go to a lot of meetings, spend a lot of time on the internet and read a metric ton of books and come back with an answer that they might find interesting.
So basically, go ahead, Jay.
You are the subject matter expert for the subject matter experts.
Right. Basically, to really boil it down, what happened most of the time, you guys know how the government works. They put out a request for a proposal and then company
RFP,
various contractors, send them proposals to do stuff. Well, prior to all of that happening, the government has to know what the hell they want first. And
good luck with that.
They gotta ask a lot of questions, and they gotta have people that they can go and ask questions about. I was pretty lucky, because it's one of the things that helped feed my writing in the science fiction area, because my area of expertise was, this sounds really funny every time I say this, I specialized in the digital forensic implications of future technology, right? So somebody at the government hears something new is going to come out. Hey, what's this Internet of Things I hear all this stuff about? What's that all about? Hey, what's the cloud?
Truck, right?
I can remember shaking my head the very first time the very first cloud question came in. hey, I've been in all these meetings and they're talking about the cloud. What the hell is they talking about? You know, somebody's got to answer that question in the beginning, and we're the poor schmucks that had to answer those damn questions.
So it's all your fault.
So it's all my fault. The good part about it is I got to, you know, research a lot of really interesting crap. You know, it's like I did a lot of, you know, work with, like, you know, deep brain implants at DARPA and, you know, a lot of other very, very interesting technology. And I got to look at it from the digital forensic implications because they never think about security first. They never think about the implications about anything until way later. They're trying to get smarter about that. But, oh, man, that's pulling teeth. So anyway, it's pretty boring, really. It's, you know, it's just a bunch of nerds, you know, sitting around, you know, PhD,
like the
gray beard. Yeah, gray beard schmucks that are trying to, you know, impress the government with how smart they are. And it's it was kind of boring, really. But it was a good job. You know, it was a great job. I enjoyed it for a long time. But boy, am I glad I'm retired.
You prefer retirement, huh?
He prefers not having to commute to work every day.
Yeah, and it's just not having to be on 66 is fabulous. I love the fact that I actually did get to retire 8 years early, which was
nice.
You know, really, you know, just like I never in a million years expected to be able to do that. I never did, and then on top of that, my wife gets to retire too. So that's it's incredably awesome. So
you can say fucking. It's okay. We have an explicit.
We have an explicit.
So I think that's really awesome too because she gets to retire on April 20th, and then hell, we get to road trip because I can write from anywhere.
Yeah, that's my door.
That's pretty awesome, Marty.
Yeah, it's
I'm more than a little jealous, not gonna lie.
I swear to God, I just can't believe it. It's still surreal. You know, this is tomorrow will be 5 weeks ago I retired. This is my fifth week in retirement, and it's still like surreal. I wonder when it stops feeling like I'm on damn vacation.
How long have you retired?
5 weeks. And I cannot believe I still fucking wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning. Every morning I'm out of bed at 5 o'clock. That's got to stop, you know, and, you know, I thought when I retired, I'd be taking a nap every day. Jeez, I haven't had one nap yet. Damn it. So anyway,
I think it stops feeling like vacation when you get bored.
That's true. I think that'll be true. And that'll be a while.
Man, I could take a 5-week vacation.
Oh yeah, 5 weeks, knock that out easy.
I would ever get bored of not having to go to work.
Oh well, man,
you don't even leave your house, man.
Well, I still have to do work.
Yes, but you don't leave your house.
I currently do not have to commute anywhere since I, you know, work from home, but.
You could feasibly, like, never get dressed.
You say that like it never happens.
I'm just saying, like, you could, like, wake up in the morning. Okay, you live in Texas where it's warm, yes. And you never leave your house. Whoa. So, feasibly, you could spend, like, a week not even putting clothes on.
Well, I do have to go outside occasionally.
Occasionally.
But I won't lie. There have been times when I've kind of like laid around in bed all morning and then, you know, got up without getting dressed, going and turned my work computer on so everyone thinks I'm at work.
So you're not FaceTiming people at work. Is that what you're saying? No,
we don't do that. We use Skype for everything, but it's voice only.
Well, you know what? The thing about not working and suddenly finding your time being your own, I literally have probably 1,000 books that I own that I have not read yet. And it's like every day I get to read another book. I was just chatting with Brita on Facebook earlier this week, and she said, hey, I just read this book. You should check this out. Boom. Suddenly, you know, I have the Kindle edition, and I just, like, read it 2 hours later, cover to cover, without stopping, and it was awesome. I love being able to do that as a
reader. How do you choose? Like, you said you have, like, a thousand books that you haven't read. Like, how do you choose?
Actually, I rotate, because I love reading classic science fiction, for instance, the stuff that I read when I was a teenager. And to read that stuff now, you know, like Robert Heinlein that I loved when I was a teenager, to read it now with my adult sensibilities, it's a completely different experience. I rotate between like classic science fiction, contemporary science fiction that's being written today by, you know, contemporary authors. And I also like to mix in indie published authors that, you know, are like the new raw authors out there like me that are just starting out. I like doing the mix, and it's easy to do, and I get to read a lot, so that's awesome.
Do you read any nonfiction? Because I'm the opposite. Like, if I read fiction, it has to be really special. You know what I mean? Like, I very rarely read fiction. Most of the stuff I read is nonfiction. So I was wondering, like, do you read any nonfiction? How does that?
I mean, do you use it
in your work?
I do use it in my work, and in fact, you know, I have a huge library in my house. I actually have 7 full sets of encyclopedias, which was the internet when I was a kid.
And,
So it's really interesting how. And I also haunt McKay's used bookstore. There's a used bookstore near where I live that's huge. And I love getting nonfiction books from there that are about specific topics. I have a giant library of, you know, how to build log cabins or, you know, I have this, I just got this week a really great nonfiction book on stone circles. And, you know, it all depends. I just love wandering the stacks and finding something interesting and picking it up. And at the used bookstore, it's very inexpensive to do that. And so and it helps. And it's good inspiration for writing, too.
Mm-hmm. I just had a patron at the library, I think it was yesterday. And he came up, and this is probably old news to everybody but me, but there's a series of books called the Foxfire series.
Love them. I own them all. Yes.
Oh, yeah. My gosh. I've seen them. I just learned about these yesterday. And
hey,
I
it'll
thought,
teach
oh
you everything. It'll teach you everything, how to slaughter a pig to how to set up a still.
Yes.
I mean,
everything.
Everything.
How to birth babies and how to bury your dead and how to... you know, make a wagon and, you know, iron smithing and everything.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how many editions of them there are, but, I just wanted to insert this cause I thought it was super cool. This whole series of books, they're called the Foxfire series. And if anybody wants to look them up.
Yeah, those are great books. It'll, you know, they have excellent first aid. You know, it has excellent volumes about dentistry when you don't have a dentist. I mean, which is like just scares the hell out of me. and so, yeah, those are great books. And
well, I bring them up also because in your first novel, you have kind of like a space guy who comes down to a world that is a little bit more rural. Can I use that word?
Uh-huh.
So it's that sort of world building where you have I noticed a lot of kind of world building generally in your first novel.
Right.
It was like really rural and there was kind of like this rural world and I was just wondering, like, did you kind of access books kind of like the Foxfire books?
I absolutely did. Okay. In fact, Firefox was one of the books that I actually read about that. And in fact, I did a metric ton of research. I love doing the research on that stuff. For instance, In that novel, it depicts the use of cauldrons of all things.
Right.
And, you know, the big cauldrons, the kind that they used to boil Bugs Bunny in, those the big ones, you know. And I had absolutely no idea how the hell would you cook in something like that? You know, a 60-gallon cauldron, what the hell is it good for? Well, I didn't realize that they don't actually cook things in the cauldron. They actually filled the cauldron with water, and it had this flat grate in the bottom. And they would put in these tall ceramic jars that would be surrounded with boiling water. So they could have porridge going at the same time they were making soup, at the same time they were making
soup. Multiple crock pots.
Right. So they would have all of these things going at the same time. They'd have oatmeal going at the same time that they would have, ten different things going all at once. And the interesting thing was is that they would keep the water boiling constantly so they could always have boiled water for tea. And they could cook stuff all day long without burning it because it was just kept warm like a crock pot. Yeah. And it was incredible to me. And in fact, the old nursery rhymes like peas porridge hot, peas porridge cold, that's based on cauldron cooking of that stuff where they would just add things to it continuously.
Right. And it would just cook for days, probably.
Right. And I loved doing the research about that for that novel. I also did a lot of research of all things about aqueducts and how they used actual aqueducts to bring water into habitats before they had high technology and a whole bunch of other stuff like that. I love doing the research for it because doing the research part it keeps me from getting bored. And if you're talking about history, really what got me started with writing was where do I even start that story? A lot of planets aligned to actually start my writing career. My first novel was published in March of 2015. That's not all that long ago, really. That's almost right 3 years ago. Holy shit. That's true.
Anniversary.
I just realized that. Anyway, it all started, by a tragedy. My brother died out of the blue. My brother died suddenly at 52. Just poof, lights out, gone. And that really got me, really, really kicked me in the guts. And suddenly it got me thinking, oh, man, what do you want to do before you die kind of thing? So writing a novel was always kind of like a bucket list item. And not long after that, I got a really bad spine injury. And that, combined with the fact that suddenly I'm trapped in a recliner, and it's amazing how fast you can watch everything on Netflix and how stupid Facebook gets really quick. So I started writing just out of sanity's sake, just to keep me from being bored. And next thing you know, I had a novel. By then it was a habit. And then suddenly 6 months after that, I had another novel. And 6 months after that, I had another novel. And it's just turned into a habit. And it turned into so much fun. It's like my favorite thing now. I just love drinking coffee and making stuff up.
Drink coffee, make stuff up.
So basically, you're doing what you've always done, only you're doing it for yourself now.
Yeah, basically. Because when I was working full time, I was publishing 2 books a year. And now that I'm, doing this full time, I'm going to try to crank it up to 4 books a year. Now, granted, I'm actually focusing more on the business side. That's where I don't know shit. I really am a babe in the woods, and I have absolutely no idea how to do marketing and how to do any of that crap. And I'm trying to learn all that.
Well, fortunately, you're at a time where that's changing so much that everything anybody knew about it, 10 years ago is obsolete.
Yeah, I can remember talking to Marco Cluse about it, and he just tells me flat out, he says, "Hey, man, every author is just making this shit up as they go. and it's totally true. And I was really lucky in that I got a lot of good advice from actual published authors. So I didn't have to like make everything up as I went. I got some really good advice from several different authors that I had the enough luck to meet and were happy enough to give me good advice.
What do you think is the most valuable piece of advice that you got?
Let's see, the most valuable piece of advice. I that's easy. Larry Correa gave me this advice. He said, "Marty, the best marketing is write a book that doesn't suck."
Well, there you go.
There you go. And then he said, "And then write the next one and the next one and don't stop." His advice really is don't wait for inspiration. Don't wait for the muse, because if you do, you'll never finish a book. You have to treat it like a job. You need to have discipline. Really, that's what I really learned about writing, because I never thought I could write anything. But once I got the discipline to sit down, button seat, and just write for a couple hours a day, the next thing I know, holy crap, if you do that, inspiration knows where to find you. So if you're going along, and granted, you know, I really like what Hemingway said. He said, "Hey, give yourself permission to write a shitty first draft." And another good piece of advice was to just hammer through. Don't look back. Don't go back and revise. Don't go back and edit your stuff. Just hammer through the first draft all the way through without stopping, because then you have something that you can mold into something good. Never expect to have a great first draft. All first drafts suck. That's where a lot of people fail for it. I see it in a lot of authors that I know, because I go to a lot of writers groups, and I have met and spoken with a lot of other authors, and they really get wrapped around the axle. And in fact, that was happening to me for many, many years. I would get in this fugue of going back and revising my first chapter again and again and again, and, you know, saying, "Oh man, I should have done this," and going back and revising, and it would kill you. It just, you never finish. And it's, I found that advice, hammering through, was always a really good advice as well.
I guess you could revise something forever if you just, you know, if you didn't let yourself call it done, you know.
And just
do rewrite after rewrite after rewrite, because there's always something you can find that needs to be fixed.
Right. And I think it's a form of self-sabotage, really, because I also found that, you know, I've read a lot of really good books about writing, and a lot of them talk about, you know, writers are chicken shits. They're afraid somebody will read their stuff and give them a one-star review, and you just have to get over that. And some people just can't let their magnum opus go into the universe because they're afraid somebody might not like it. You know, screw that.
I think this is a good point to bring in the self-publishing aspect.
Yes.
Because there are a lot of self-published authors on Amazon. A lot.
And
not many of them are good.
Right. And the fact is, when I first started it, that was what I was going to do. I was just going to write a book. I figured, you know, hey, I'm going to write this on a lark. My friends will read it and they'll tell me what a retard I am. And that'll be it. You know, I figured that was it. And then I started talking to Marco about it, because that was in those days is when Marco was just starting out too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he did. He gave me, you know, he blazed the trail, and he told me, oh, here's what you got to do. And he actually showed me how to use the tools provided by Amazon to generate a Kindle edition. Right. So he showed me how to do them. He showed me how to get the thing published, because that's how he started out. And mm-hmm. and so that's what my entire plan was in the beginning. But in the process, just prior to when I started publishing, I got some good advice from some other authors. And in the meantime, printing on demand technology started to come out. That's where Amazon, I use this company called CreateSpace, where you can upload your book in a specific format and a specific method and tune it up and actually create a book that is a paper edition that once it's published to Amazon, people can buy it, and it doesn't exist until they buy it. They buy it, they print it, and mail it to them. And that technology has freed up a lot of people. Now, the thing that I did, the lesson I learned, and the thing that Marco told me was, do not upload a shitty edition. Hire a professional editor because you suck. And it's true. I totally sucked. Yeah.
You can't edit yourself. You just can't.
No, don't edit yourself. And it's really cracks me up, because I didn't even know how to hire a decent editor. You know, the first editor that I hired, you know, I paid money. She edited the novel and everything, and I thought it was great. You know, I had several people read it, and they said, "Wow, this is like a real novel, Marty. How the hell did you do that?"
And that's got to be great. How did you do that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it surprised me more than anyone. So I uploaded it, and the funny thing is, in the first month after it got published, people love to email authors, I have discovered. And because I had an email address in the book, there are people out there that love to email you every typo that you make.
So it's like blogging, but
so it's like crowdsourcing the editing on that first novel.
Oh my god.
Because my editor was not that good. Right. So I got about 200 emails about typos in the first month, including a typo on the back cover.
Oh no.
I sold about, I think there's about 200 copies sold in that first month of the typo ridden edition that one day may be a collector's item.
Because
it doesn't have the word "of" on the back cover where it should. It cracks me up, because that got by so many people. I just, it's incredible to me that it happens. I just love that. I'm a firm believer in paying professionals to do it. Pay the money, I swear, because they'll make you look like you actually know what you're doing. And it's funny, because out in the universe, it cracks me up, the people that will email you, there are common Nazis out there that they'll tell you the page in the sentence exactly where you got your commas wrong, and it's like, oh, thanks, you poor person, you stub your toe on every fucked up comma out there in the universe. I couldn't stand that.
Yeah, that must suck.
That must totally suck, because, man, I suck at commas.
So, you uploaded a repaired edition?
Yeah, I quietly did a second edition. I collected all those typos up, and I got another editor, and they went through it rapidly and fixed a whole bunch of other stuff that even the comma Nazis missed. And I quietly uploaded a second edition that got no more complaints about so many typos. So, now, don't be wrong, there are still typos in there. And I see them periodically, but I have quit.
I've seen typos in Neal Stephenson's books, so you know it's typos are type. You know it's you can't have that many words in a row without a mistake, no matter how many times you look at it.
Right.
I guess at some point when we have competent AI that can do that.
Well, speaking of which, once I actually started making some money, I could afford some professional tools to help me write. I have some professional tools that are like light AI based, really, really super smart tools on spelling, grammar, and word usage in the writing. So that now, when I'm done with my final draft, I'll run it through these tools. The tools themselves go out and will find another 1,000 things. And I'm serious about that. I'm absolutely literal. I think that the book is as good as it's going to get, and it will find 1,000 things that I need to fix. And yeah. and you go through, and you're going, damn, it is right. I use the word debris 30 times on that page. and that's a true story. My wife will never let me forget it, so I always make sure that I'll use the word debris in every book I ever write from now on. But yeah, it's great. It really, the tools will tell you, hey, you're using this word a little too often. How about using this?
I did not realize they were that advanced. That's interesting.
Yeah, they are, and they're great about commas and punctuation, and the tools are very advanced. It'll even detect when you're writing in the passive voice and things like that, and tell you may want to revise this and stuff. I don't even know what the fuck a passive voice is half the time. It's like I just get the words down, and the tools are really, really helpful. And the reason why they're helpful is the cleaner the copy I can get to my editor, the more time the editor can spend making me not suck. So I'm all for that.
So
does it change a certain word to ducking, though? That's my question.
Actually, no.
I had never intended to say that ducking door or you ducking moron.
No, in fact, that's a funny thing. Readers, I had a reader. Oh, I loved your last novel, but you used the F word 137 times and the C word twice. You're counting? I am serious. There are people that count them. It's like, great, excellent. That book was only 300 pages long. Excellent. I did pretty good.
Yeah, never underestimate the power of human whatever.
Yeah, it's funny. It's really hard for me not to curse in my books. I didn't realize how much I cursed until I actually went. I didn't believe her. I actually went to the final version, the Word doc, and I actually did a global search, and I'm going, son of a bitch, really did use the F word 137 times. She even counted them all right.
But people cuss.
Is there a way to count words in Kindle? Like, you can do word searches in Kindle.
I don't know.
Because, like, in an e-book, you can search for a certain word in the entire book. So I'm wondering, maybe, like, they did a search in the e-book version, and then...
Yeah, I would believe that before I would believe that somebody actually kept, like, a
sat notebook, there with a little tally marks. Notebook
tally marks. Hey, count up to 137.
Have you actually met any people, Marty? Because I guarantee you there's somebody out there doing exactly that.
I actually have met people. And here, let me tell you one weird story. The first time I actually met a fan in the wild.
Oh, boy.
Okay?
This was like kind of freaked me out. So
I'm your biggest fan.
Well, no, it's weird. I was actually this is the weirdest story. I was attending a funeral with my wife.
Oh,
okay. This is a funeral of somebody I did not know. It was the mother of one of Brenda's friends at work. Right, the mother of her friend. We were there to support her friend. And you know how funerals are, they're kind of creepy. They have an open casket over there and there's people like milling about at like a cocktail party with a cadaver in the room. It's really weird. So my wife's friend was introducing people around and she's saying, and this is my coworker Brenda and her husband Martin Wilsey. And this woman that I don't know that's standing there, she goes, Martin Wilsey, the author?
Hell no.
And we're at a funeral, right? And this is a weird time when my second novel had been published, but not my third, right? So she was desperately waiting for the third novel, and she starts gushing and starts asking me all these questions, and I'm like... kind of like corralling her off to the side. It's like it's like, you know, dead people warning. It's but it was very flattering and it was kind of weird. And but yeah, the whole fan thing is just really weird. Doing book signings is really weird. I love that stuff though, because I made an ass load of cash selling books out of the trunk of my car. It's that the whole, you know, I don't think about it. I really probably should think about all that more, you know, for business wise or whatever, but I don't, I don't watch the royalties. I don't read reviews. I don't pay enough attention to all the business side. I'm trying to now that I'm retired more, you know, but I'm a firm believer in like letting professionals do that stuff. Because they'll do a better job than I, because I'm the biggest amateur that there is. But yeah, weird. I don't know where I was. I'm meandering.
You need an agent, Marty.
Actually, you know what? I am actually in talks with some film agents of all things.
Whoa!
That would be totally awesome. That would be totally awesome if that happened.
There are two words that dampen my enthusiasm on this. Starship Troopers.
No. Yeah.
They wanted to pay me, if they wanted to pay me $1 million to turn my book into shit, that's great with me. You know.
Oh, fine. You'd be a fool to turn it down.
Yeah, but I would be. And
you know, but it's such a great, I loved the story. I loved it.
Yeah, me too. That's one of my favorites too. Starship Troopers, absolutely.
Oh no, I mean your series, my friend.
Oh, thank you.
Really, really enjoyed it, and I know there's no way on God's green earth any Hollywood producer could recreate the world I've built in my mind reading your book, the books.
Uh huh. Yeah, I didn't really.
It would just. You know, I just had this horrible fear that it would be like Frozen, you know, like they'd be like singing snowmen and stuff in the middle of it. Like, no,
jeez. Oh, actually, I actually did get an email from somebody at Disney. That would be wild if that sorted out, but that didn't work out. As soon as lawyers start getting involved, that's, I'm out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway,
those guys can ruin anything.
Yeah, it is. But actually, you know, the interesting thing is, they're more interested in my fourth novel, which was actually a standalone novel, and they're primarily interested in it because it's got a strong female lead in it that doesn't have a boyfriend, doesn't have a romantic interest at all.
Shocking.
That is.
Oh my God.
That, that's so innovative. It's like
a woman
who
can do stuff by herself. Holy shit.
What do you mean she's competent and flawed and still badass? And I've gotten a lot more feedback about that book being more cinematic, and it is more self-contained too. It's a much shorter story. The Solstice 31 saga is like really a 1,000-page single story. My next novels, I'm going to stick to standalone novels for a bit. now. And but the ones that they're really interested in making films of are actually some of the short stories that I've written. Mm. But because it's much easier to convert a short story to the screen than it is. Yes, it is. And that has encouraged me enough. I've actually started a original science fiction screenplay. And that's turning out to be kind of fun, too. You know, I've got the professional screenplay writing software. I'm kind of researching how that market works. I'm going to set it in contemporary times and set in Richmond, Virginia, at real locations and stuff. It's kind of fun sorting that out. It's because I am just doing all this for fun. And that's, I swear to God, that's a big key about it. You know, if you're having fun with it, people can kind of sense that in your books.
So let me ask you the typical author question.
Mm-hmm.
Or one I'm sure you've heard this before. When you're writing a book, what do you start with? Do you have a plot? Do you just start writing words and see where it goes? Or, you know, how do you operate?
I am a very organized planner. I outline the hell out of everything. I start with an idea, you know, and basically, you know, all my stories start with what would be the TV guide description of the movie of it, you know, like three sentences that describe the story, and that three sentences turns into nine. And then I'm a proponent of the nine act structure of stories, which is a specific, you know, plot methodology and stuff. And I actually do all of my creative thinking, all of the ideas about the story on pad and paper with outlining. That's when I don't have to worry about spelling or grammar or punctuation. I'm just thinking about the story. And as I outline along, like the outline for the novel that I'm writing now is 36 pages long, just the outline of it. And that conveys into the software writing tool that I use directly as scene by scene. And once all of those scenes are in there, it's easy to go in and write the novel. I never have writer's block. I always can proceed to the next thing. Some days I might not feel like writing this section. I often write the ending before I write the middle. But it makes it really easy by doing detailed outlining and all the plotting and all the character development in advance. And so I'm really organized about it. And I also don't allow myself to work on more than one project at a time. So I write one novel and I finish it. And the only thing that I'll allow myself to do while I'm writing it is I'll work on the outline for the next one, only because that's in pad and paper. That's usually when, you know, I'm sitting in the hammock or, you know, I'm just thinking about something else. And I have a great idea. I'll just write it down. I have notebooks full of ideas. I have the exact opposite of writer's block. I have writer's gush.
Writer's diarrhea.
Yeah, something like that. So I have tons and tons of ideas and plots and character sketches and drawings and stuff crammed full in notebooks that I try to keep organized. I often don't have them as organized as I'd like. But yeah, it's big fun. I mean, it's just fun. And to actually, by the time I sit down to actually write a novel, it only takes me about 12 weeks to write it. I mean, this is when I was working full time.
That's pretty quick.
Yeah, well, you know, I would get home from work and I would sit down. Well, if you can't sit down and just write for a couple hours until my wife got home. And, you know, in 2 hours a day, 5 days a week, that's, you know, 10 hours a week. I would write maybe 10,000 words. And that turns into, in 12 weeks, a full novel. Now, that's just the first draft because I don't go back and I don't tweak. I don't do anything. It usually takes just as long to do the subsequent drafts. So we'll see how that dynamic changes now that I'm doing this full time.
Your Saga 31.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like the, you know, sort of the classic 50s kind of writing. Was that your
inspiration? I write the kind
or
of
something, or
I write the kind of books I like to read.
Yeah.
And so to answer your question, yeah, it is kind of like that.
Alan actually
The subcategory of that story is Robinsonade. It's like, you know, Robinson Crusoe.
Yes.
Because it's a guy stranded on.
Yeah,
you
it's
know,
like Jason Denault or you know some of those the you know the high tech guy stranded in a low tech society and
right exactly
gets to use all the advantages, but oops, there's a surprise.
Right, and yeah, well, there's huge surprises for Barkus in that story, multiples, and but yeah, you're absolutely right. Because some of my big influences are Robert Heinlein and Arthur C. Clarke, and you know, the Lord of the Rings, and a lot of all that stuff, and that's how medieval stuff got mixed in with the science fiction and everything else associated in there. And people like that, and I'm actually amazed at how wide the audience has been for that. I think that I get a lot of readers that I just totally didn't expect. You know, a lot of women read my books. Maybe it's just that they're more likely to email me and yell at me because I made them cry, and so. I don't know what the real demographic is. There's no way I can really tell.
I bet Amazon could tell you.
You know, I bet they could, but they won't.
Yeah.
And in fact,
keep that to themselves.
You know, I am a firm believer that the only reason that I have had any success at all is because I got really, really lucky with the algorithms on Amazon. The weirdest thing,
if you like this, you want to try that.
Right. The recommendation engine. If you get in there, I don't know how, what the algorithm looks at. I know that you probably have to have a certain body of reviews and sales and stuff, but my book, well, I also think that the best thing that you can do is know someone famous because I went to college with this guy who his name's Dan Povenmire, and he is one of the creators of the cartoon Phineas and Ferb, right?
Oh, yeah.
He played Doofenshmirtz on Phineas
and Ferb. Curse you, Betty the Platypus!
Yes. That's the guy. Well, anyway, I went to college. This is one of my friends in college. And out of the blue, I got a Facebook request from the guy. I had, you know, totally lost track of him and stuff. And we were catching up and it was cracking me up. And we were, you know, he was telling me, yeah, I spent all these years working on The Simpsons. And now I got this show called Phineas and Ferb. And I go, oh, my kids love that show. And one day, see, he's like, somebody famous, and he's got like a shitload of Twitter followers and friends on Facebook and stuff like that. And there was a day, you know, I sent him a comment. We were talking and I sent him a comment, my book, and he finished reading my book and he put a tweet out and said, hey, my brother or my friend Marty, he wrote a science fiction novel. Check it out. And I sold 7,000 books in one day.
Wow.
Just because of that guy's tweet, right? Ugh. What happened after that is that the recommendation engine for my book started coming up with people that bought The Martian.
Oh.
If you like this, maybe you should try this. And I also learned that science fiction readers are the second largest body of Amazon users that use OneClick for Kindle books, right?
And the largest is romance.
Largest is romance. And one day I'm going to get a pseudonym and I'm going to write a fucking romance novel. And see how that.
Wait. Are you going to write a blue romance novel? Or are you going to?
I have no idea. Yeah. Well, anyway, so once the recommendation engine started recommending my book with The Martian, the actual sales started really skyrocketing. And after that, my second novel, all the people that bought the first one started buying the second one. And then the recommendation for people that bought The Expanse also was being recommended to buy my second novel, The Broken Cage. And so I don't know how the damn thing works. If I did, I'd figure out how I could manipulate it.
Yeah, you and everyone
but
else.
You can't. Yeah, but I swear to God, there is a thing that happens at some point or another, and I think it really is in sales. Once you get enough sales, these algorithms start, you know, tweaking, and you bubble up to the top of this thing, and it's like probably totally not fair, and it's
well,
it's
like Greta great, said, great, you know, great. There's a lot of shitty Kindle books out there.
Oh yeah, there is a lot of shit. So, in fact, I've waded through a ton of shit out there too, and you know, it's really weird. I, as an author, can no longer review books that I've read because they'll come back and they'll do vengeance reviews. You know,
so you can't. Well, ooh, you could give someone a good review though, right?
Yeah, if I read a book that I love, I'll definitely go out and give them a good review and a, you know, good heads up.
But you can't do a one star.
Yeah, I can't do a one star. And in fact, you know, there was a point where I thought I was being helpful if I were to tell somebody, you know, give them constructive criticism. But fuck that. I'm not even doing that anymore.
Yeah, it's nobody wants to hear that.
Nobody wants to hear that. And in fact, if you, you know, if you think your shit doesn't stink and, you know, your first draft is your final draft, hey, good luck with that. And Breida's absolutely right, there is a ton of that shit out on Kindle, because anybody can publish anything. I mean, you literally can publish whatever the hell you want, and the thresholds that they check, you know, they have some automated plagiarism checks and other stuff like that, but I mean, it's amazing the crap that really is out there. And
like
thing
that
is,
guy
is
that wrote the, what was it, the dinosaur butt raptor or whatever it was?
Yeah.
Okay.
I almost bought that book so I could do a review, but
verified purchase.
Yeah, that's right. I didn't want that verified purchase on my record.
Oh man.
So yeah, that's fun. It's interesting, but I can't look at the stats though, because I found that, you know, if I start reading the reviews, it's like I start taking myself too serious, or, you know, I start, you know, wondering. I think that one of the powers that an author, if they want to keep writing, is you got to not care what people think. You have to decide when you're done, and you got to put it out there and just walk away. And if people like it, fine. If they don't, hey, they'll let you know, and they just won't buy it.
Yeah, as long as people are paying you money for it, you're doing something right.
Yeah, that's right. And in fact, you know, it's really weird. I have found that the most, you know, they say that you can't judge a book by its cover, but people do. The cover is usually the first thing that makes somebody pause, because Amazon shopping is really fast. You know, people go, hey, look at that. Oh, that that says science fiction to me. Let me click on that.
Brings up another question.
Mm.
How do you do your covers?
I hire professionals to do them. My first covers, I bought art from artists out in the universe that seemed to, you know, be science fiction-y. And I used the default Amazon CreateSpace cover creators initially. If you have seen the first editions of my novels, they have subsequently all been refactored. I now have branding. It's like, it cracks me up. It's a thing though, because I am a firm believer in hiring professionals for stuff. And first and foremost, professional editors, professional cover illustrators is right behind that, because, you know, my cousin that can draw, he can't draw that good. Okay.
I wonder how many people do that, because I've seen a lot of shitty covers on Amazon.
A lot of shitty covers. And the fact is, if you find a cover creator, a designer that knows what the hell they're doing, you know, you, and that one that's in touch with the market, they can really help your sales. Because when I re-released all my books with new covers that had the new branding, I had a ginormous spike in sales just by doing that. I mean, it's crazy. The problem with my first book is a thumbnail in Amazon. You couldn't read the title because the font was too small.
Oh.
Right. And, that's a really smart lesson.
Yeah,
it's like,
no kidding.
I'm a fucking idiot. I should have been able to see that for my own self. But, you know, a professional says, you know, here's the criteria you got to do. And there's a giant amount of criteria that they have that they, you know, I've learned all about that side of it. But I'm a firm believer in having a professional. And now that I can afford it too, because it costs money, honestly.
Sure.
It costs money to have a professional, you know, purpose build a cover that's based on like characters from your novels and stuff. It costs a lot more money. And, God, I love my wife. She, you know, went out on a limb with me to spend a couple of $1,000s on getting the first book out. But luckily now she considers my hobby to be self-sustaining. So, now that the accounts, you know, I have an accountant that takes care of the money part, and all of that I can afford to pay for really good covers. In fact, I actually already have the covers for my next four novels finished already. And in fact, just yesterday, my cover illustrator just sent me the cover for my next short story. And I've started branding my short stories too. That I give away for free. But it makes a big difference if you've got a good cover. And if the cover, you know, tells a story and it's cool and it's related to the story, it helps a lot. Our readers really, really like that. And I like the fact that, you know, you can stash stuff in the covers, whereas they're reading their book, you know, they'll be sitting there reading it, and then they'll go to the cover and they'll go, holy shit, the gun that she's holding says 60% charge on the side of it, or something like that. Or, you know, the scene that they're in, or like in Virtues of the Vicious, I cannot tell you how many people love the fact that the cover has my cat on it. If you look at the back cover of that book, it's funny. It's actually an actual photo that she took and she converted, so it looks like my own cat is on the windowsill of a space station looking at the stars out the window.
As cats do.
As cats do. And that cat is actually a character written into my novel. And I cannot tell you how popular the damn cat is. I have so many demands for a sequel that has the cat in it. It's like they care about the cats more than they care about the other characters. It cracks me up.
Does this cat walk through walls?
Oh, no. No, in fact, you know, I was thinking to myself, it was funny. I was talking to Schwartz about, oh, man, I'm thinking about putting the cat in this book. What do you think? And he goes, and he starts rattling off all these books that have cats in it. And I go, well, it's a thing. I'm not the first person to do it. I probably won't be the last. It's a thing. And
I bet there are more cats in science fiction books than there are dogs.
Yeah, I bet there is. And
there's series of mystery novels that are like the cat is either a character or a co-author.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it's I can't remember the. This is funny because there's a series of mystery novels, and the author's last name is Brown. I can't remember her first name, but her co-author is Sneaky Pie Brown, which is her cat. Hmm. So yeah, cats and books are like a thing.
Well, what's even a bigger thing, and I actually credit this and credit my dumbass cat with selling a lot of my books, because on my blog, I have this weekly webcomic that is actually a comic of me as a writer, as an idiot writer, sitting at my desk trying to write, and my cat, who thinks he's my agent and my editor, and he's always wisecracking about how stupid I am. Nice. And it's just... as they do. And it's just this silly cartoon that one of my college buddies, who's an artist, he started, you know, drawing these pictures of me with the cat because, you know, he had visited and he had seen how I write with my cats always like right next to me trying to lay on my keyboard and shit. And so he started sending me these cartoons as a lark, and I started publishing them. And so now I got a bunch of them that I rotate, you know, through changing the thought balloons on them. And oh my God, I write this stupid blog about writing, and I put up this cartoon every Sunday, and it gets like 10,000 hits every Sunday. people come just to see my stupid cat cartoon, and I think it sells a lot of books. I think it draws them in, whatever it takes, you know. And it's like, you know, it's just cracks me up. I just think I never in a million years would have thought, hey, for marketing, let's do a stupid cartoon with a cat that thinks he's your editor. Never would have thought of that in a million years.
But if you had and done it on purpose, it probably would have flopped.
Yep, probably. And it's just really weird. I spend like 10 minutes on it every week, and it's usually, you know, something really stupid that happened that week or that day or whatever. But it cracks my wife up. That's the part that I like. You know, she gets to, you know, I ask her, I show it to her. Is this funny? And if she laughs, I'll publish it.
We're actually a little over, but I have one more question.
Okay, go.
You've been to a lot of cons now.
Yes, yes.
As an author.
Uh-huh.
What is your best/funniest con story?
Let's see.
Because I know there is one.
Let's see. Funny. You want funny.
Or scary, or, you know.
Let's see. I should have keyed something up in my brain for this. I was sitting at a panel at a literary science fiction conference, and the panel was about artificial intelligence in science fiction. You know, the depiction of AIs. My books have a shitload of AIs in them and stuff like that. Blah blah blah, and So I'm in this panel, and you know, it's mostly, you know, totally like geek out. You know, these people are it's a total nerd fest and stuff like that. And this woman started tearing into the entire panel because we were white males, having nothing to do with AI, having nothing to do with anything else. But this, you know, and there's five of us up there, you know, and, you know, I was far from like the most famous author on this panel, and we're all just like, just completely taken aback. Like, what the hell did that, how the hell did that happen? And if you had been tracking the whole shenanigans with the Hugos and all that kind of stuff.
Oh yes.
And I, you know, I had, you know, none of that stuff. I didn't get any of that blood on my shoes until that day. And suddenly I was the old misogynist, you know, white guy who had women that were slaves in his books, and how dare I, you know, think I could write a female character or because a character of in color.
Primitive societies, women are never slaves.
I know. And the weird thing is that, you know, I always write strong women that are heroes, for fuck's sake. And, that doesn't count. But I thought I was seeing movement where, you know, like guys were going to like start dragging this woman out because she was just incredible. The vitriol.
Not like you wrote gore, for God's sakes.
I know. And the fact, you know, if she had actually read any of our books, it, you know, might have been, you know, more interesting. But somebody else on the panel had just straight up asked her, how many of our books have you read? Oh, I haven't read any of our books, but I know your type. It's like, okay then. And I was like, no, you really don't know my type. Not at all. And that was the weirdest thing because.
Yeah, that's a little bizarre.
Yeah, because it was like, okay, that was uncomfortable. And, you know, it's really weird to have strangers come up to you later and apologize for something they didn't do. It's like, hey, it wasn't your fault. That's not your thing or whatever. Huh. And so that was really weird. Yeah, another, you know, that was a shitty experience. A really good experience was I sat on a panel about PTSD. And I actually got invited to this panel because in my last novel, I had a character listed in there that had PTSD. I never said, you know, hey, this character has PTSD. What happened was I did a lot of research. And I actually know a couple authors that actually were soldiers, you know, in Afghanistan and stuff, that actually had legit full-blown PTSD. And I spent a lot of time talking with them and, you know, spent a lot of time researching how that whole thing worked. And it's really interesting because I ended up sitting on this panel and people in the audience that had read my book were like really, really appreciative about the depiction that I had in there about the panic attacks and about the feelings and the alcoholism and really serious concepts and about something that's not really typically a fun topic that you address in science fiction. That's as frivolous as I write. But the thing is I like to write real characters that have, you know, more 3D, you know, existence beyond that. So I really, really enjoyed the feedback from that particular panel. Was good.
Cool. Well, I don't know. I would assume that going to those as an author is probably like a blessing and a curse.
Yeah, it is. It's really weird. Being purely mercenary, I like to go to them because I end up selling a lot of books. And in fact, you know, the last fall I went to a literary conference where I was a guest author, and someone had given me the idea, hey, take your first Kindle book, you know, take Still Falling, and make it 99¢ during the conference, because people sit in the audience and they look up the authors on their phones while you're talking.
Oh yeah.
And a book that's 99, you know, a full novel that's 99¢.
Oh yeah, that's a
they'll sit there right in the audience and they'll one click it.
Yep.
Right. So I sold so many books for 99¢ that resulted in them buying all my books.
Well, sure, because once you
that
once you
I have permanently, I permanently left that book at 99¢ on Kindle. Now it's permanently 99¢.
I noticed a lot of them are on Kindle Unlimited also.
Oh, they're all on Kindle Unlimited. It's just another revenue stream. The whole business end of this is really fucked up. I mean, and the weird thing about Kindle Unlimited, they pay royalties by the page read.
I always wondered about that.
It's really messed up because you have absolutely no idea how many books you sold. I mean, it completely pulls the rug out from under you.
Because you just get about, do they tell you how many pages you're getting paid for, or do you just get an amount and you kind of have to interpolate?
Right. They tell you how many pages were read by the day.
Wow.
You know, yesterday 57,000 pages were read, blah, blah, blah. And you get royalties at the end of the month based on how many pages were read. But you never know how many actual readers you had. It's really, really, it's so really weird. Because
it could be 50,000 people that read one page or.
That's right. And the weird thing was, it used to be when I first started, Kindle Unlimited was if they read like 15% into the book, you'd get the entire royalty for the whole book. But Amazon figured, oh, this is costing us too much money. If these people are only going to read, you know, a little bit of this book, we can screw the authors out of some more money. I never really cared because if you turn it off, you just don't get that check. A lot more people use Kindle Unlimited now than ever, and that's like it's like Netflix for books.
Yeah.
I love it. Book signing.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Marty.
At book signings, I have a QR code in a frame for all my books right there on the table.
Nice.
Hey, you got Kindle Unlimited? Hey, just hit the QR code and you've got my book. And I tell them. And go to the last page. right away.
So if they page through page, does it count as being read every page? Or
it does. It does.
I wonder if Amazon goes, no, you couldn't possibly read it that fast.
I'm wondering, you know, if some enterprising Chinese guy is going to come up with a bot to like download it and turn it to the last page or whatever.
Or in China, just pay people to go click, 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 click.
That's right. That is right.
It's even cheaper.
Yeah. And I love Kindle. I love Kindle Unlimited, and I love Audible. All my books have audio editions as well. And that's big, big, big. I love that.
I don't know if having Gilbert Gottfried being the voice was a good idea, though.
What did you say?
How awesome would that be?
Yeah, it would be awesome for about 15 seconds. And then you'd be like, okay, I'm done. I've had enough.
Maybe that's wrong with what's wrong with all those people on 66. They're listening to Gilbert Gottfried doing books on tape.
They're listening to Gilbert Gottfried read 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, God. don't make me think that.
Too late.
And then he talk, huh?
Dead pets. I'm thinking of dead pets.
We are so over time.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, it's great.
Oh, yeah, thanks for having me.
It was a great time. I enjoyed it. Good show. And we will probably want to have you back on at some point when you, you
know, yep. Anytime. Hey, I'm retired, man.
That's right. You don't have to get up in the morning.
Right. And it, shit, we didn't even get to talk about guns.
No, we didn't.
So, oh, damn it.
Next time.
Next time.
All right.
Yeah. Cause I live
that's
in
how we, that's how we get you back, Marty. Yeah. Always leave wanting more.
That's right.
That's right. That's right. That's right. All right. Well, thanks, guys. It's been awesome.
Thanks, Marty.
Hey. Thanks, Marty. Hey, we'll talk to you guys later.
All right.
Heck yeah.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Bye, everyone.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.